I'd like to call the meeting of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee for Tuesday, February 21st, to order. And just a reminder for members, we do start at 10:30 on Tuesday. I also have a request here from the Senate Sergeant, Senate Media Services, and asked me to read this to request that members and testifiers turn off your iPads and cell phones when you're in this room. Apparently, they've had a number of disruptions in the, and I know you do, Senator Higgins, but just for others, they sent me a note here, so I'm just reminding everybody. We have two bills today. We're going to take up Senate File 1701, which is Senator Cruz, and then Senate File 1675, Senator Benson. And so, Senator Cruz, if you'd like to come to the table. Members, this is a bill that is going to be referred to the Jobs Committee. There are sections in the bill that are not pertinent to our committee. And as I understand it from looking at the bill and talking to Senator Cruz, primarily what this committee is concerned with is Section 1 of the bill. And so I'd like to if possible, limit our discussion and, frankly, any testifying to that section of the bill. There are other parts of the bill that are things that will be taken up in the Jobs Committee, and I don't know that that's things that we ought to be examining in this committee. So, Senator Cruz, welcome to our committee.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members. It's a pleasure to be before you today. This is actually the first time that I've had a bill before the Health and Human Services Committee. So, feels great to be here, and I appreciate it. I don't know how you'd like to handle this, Mr. Chairman. I do have a author's amendment that I was hoping somebody could offer for me that is concerning Section 1. I don't know if it would be your pleasure to do that now. And then also, as you mentioned, I think the next step after that, if it be the pleasure of this committee to pass this on, would be to send it to the Jobs Committee.
All right. Thank you, Senator Cruz. Let's get your bill in the shape that you need it. Senator Hall moves.
Yep.
An author's amendment, Amendment A1 to Senate File 1701. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Senator Cruz, the bill is as you wish it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Today what we have before you is the Restaurant Recovery and Jobs Act. I'm extremely excited to be carrying this bill. What a lot of folks don't know is that I am a very long-time hospitality industry employee. I've been working in the restaurant industry since I was 16 years old. I started off
So that was just last year then, right? I'm sorry.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I started off when I was 16 years old flipping pizzas at a mom-and-pop pizza shop, and have been involved in the industry ever since. I think as we look at this bill, I see an industry, and like I said, I can speak from personal experience, that I feel in some ways has been kind of neglected. The hospitality industry here in Minnesota averages about $11.4 billion in annual sales. That's a huge percentage of our economy here. It generates about 17% of Minnesota's overall tax revenue, and it employs 252,000 people, which essentially what that equates to is about one in every 10 Minnesotans works in some way in the hospitality industry. It has a special place in my heart, and I think this is important considering our current economic climate, because it's an industry that an overwhelming group of people can participate in. It's one of those fallback industries that if you're transitioning in between jobs, if you're trying to educate yourself, or if you need that cash available, it's really there for all Minnesotans to take advantage of. And I think that's important, as we do transition. So very, very important to me. As you mentioned, the pertinent part, the reason we're here before your committee today is Section 1. Essentially what Section 1 does, let me tell you what it does not do first. The amendment that we just passed and the shape that I'm preferring this is it does not establish any new health inspection fees or adopt a one-size-fits-all mentality to the industry and those health inspection fees across the state. What it does do is it requires local units of government to essentially be accountable for these charges that they're charging the restaurant industry. I think what you're going to see is we dig into some of the handouts that you'll see here, and I'm specifically mentioning this one, is there's a wide range of fees that our restaurant industry is being charged here. And the goal of this legislation is to present a transparency to that. We want to make sure that we're not taking this vital industry and overcharging it. We're simply saying that whatever the costs are to do that inspection, to do that licensure, you have to be accountable for those. That's the gist of it here. Beside me, I have Dan McElroy, and I'll let him speak a little bit more in detail on the language.
Thank you. Senator, Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name's Dan McElroy. I'm Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Restaurant Association.
Welcome to the committee.
Bill has the provision you're discussing, Section 1, came to our attention because of a concern our members have had about rapidly rising health inspection fees across the state. And we originally wrote this to roll back the Minnesota Department of Health's fees to their level before the last increase. However, as we did more research, met with the Department of Health, met with more of our members, it was determined that the real challenge was not the state agency fees, but the fees set by local units of government. And the chart that is in your handouts, and it's on the back of a map, the map shows the counties that have delegated authority. The dark green counties are Minnesota Department of Health inspected areas. The red counties are where there is a full delegation, including both the Chapter 157, food, beverage, and lodging responsibilities, and the responsibilities for manufactured home parks and campgrounds. So what we discovered was that the fees vary widely across the state, and that they have been going up relatively quickly in recent years. As you know, state agencies are required to charge only a fee sufficient to cover the cost of providing the service. That's been in Chapter 16A of Minnesota statutes for a very long time. The effect of this amendment is to incorporate a similar standard into the delegation agreements between cities and counties. We had thought about, very honestly, asking the cities and counties to not have fees that were higher than the Department of Health. We decided that isn't a good solution. They may have costs that are higher than the Department of Health or may make unique decisions about the level of service they choose to provide. We wrote this as permissive language that the commissioner may include in delegation agreements. Setting of fees in discussion, collaboration, negotiation with county health boards or city health boards, and that the fees may very well be higher than those set by the Department of Health. I want to commend some counties. There are some rural counties whose fees are lower than the Department of Health, and we hope that they remain that. They obviously have costs that are lower. But we are concerned about fees that are very high. In addition to the fact that fees you see are high, how they're applied is at times challenging. Hennepin County, for example, charges a separate fee for both a kitchen and a bar. So a small restaurant that has a liquor license would pay, and if you use in Hennepin County the example of a restaurant of more than 200 seats and that has a bar, they'd pay $9.95 for the kitchen and $9.95 for the bar. Even if they are exactly in the same location, those inspections are done by the same person on the same day consecutively. And we believe that charging twice for that is challenging and doesn't reflect the cost of providing the service. So the purpose of this, as amended, is simply to hold local units of government to the standard state agencies have been held to for several decades. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony. I just had a question for you in the chart. Category that you illustrate by, I think, Applebee's, TGI Friday, with bar, large, I assume that means a larger restaurant. Minneapolis average is $8,300. Is that a typo or is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, it is not a typo. We saw it and said, is that really true? And called back to the Department of Health, asked them to check. And as of this morning, someone was going to check with the city of Minneapolis, and there may be somebody here who can provide more information. But that is the response that the Department of Health got from them after several inquiries.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Cruz and our testifier, I think it would be wise if we could get either someone from the city that's here or verify that. You know, the information that I got is that that isn't the average, that that is on the higher end of the scale for very, very large venues such as First Avenue or places that would have live shows that are large venues that cost a lot to provide service for them. I would, Mr. Chair, ask if someone from the city's here that can kind of help us go through that a little bit or make sure that this is accurate, because I do agree with you, Mr. Chair, that that jumps out of the page.
Looks like, Sir Hayden, we have somebody approaching the table, and if you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Melissa Reed. I'm with the City of Minneapolis Office of Intergovernmental Relations. And Senator Hayden's description is accurate. The city does have a very complex fee schedule when it comes to restaurants and venues of that sort, and a lot of it depends on the square footage of the venue, whether the venue has live music, whether the venue serves alcohol, what the total capacity is of the venue for people to come and stand, whether they're standing, whether they're sitting. So there are a lot of different variables in there, and Senator Hayden's description is right that the figure you see here, the 8368, where it says Applebee's TGI Fridays, that's actually for us not accurate. In Minneapolis, that would be considered a Class C1 license, which is, as Senator Hayden mentioned, the larger music venues like First Ave, the Fine Line, and we define those as five musicians or more with amplified music. That's how we would define those. And then there is a square footage breakdown, I believe, between a Class C2 license and a Class C1 license. And I have a request into my department to separate those two by square footage. But it is targeted at those large clubs that you would see downtown.
Thank you. Ms. Reed, if you were going to fill in a number to replace that $8,300 as an average for that category that is noted on the chart, what would your estimate, and I'm not going to hold you to it, but because you may not be prepared, but what would be kind of an average for that class of establishment?
Mr. Chair, and I do have a specific question into city staff, specifically what would an Applebee's, a TGI Fridays be? Okay. So I would be hesitant to guess. I expect I will get an answer sometime during the hearing,
okay.
So I'd be happy to come back all with right. A more specific answer for
when
you.
When you get that, maybe if you just raise your hand, and I'm sure other committee members might have the same questions, so we'll try to bring you back up and you can fill us in with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think this would be an appropriate opportunity to stress again that this legislation would not prohibit legitimate fees. I think the conversation that we're having right here is the exact conversation that we want to stimulate between the department and these local units of government. Just add that additional level of accountability there and make sure that we have the explanations. At no point in the legislation does it prohibit. It just says that there has to be explanations and that it's ultimately the department needs to sign off on that.
Senator Cruz, just the amendment that we adopted, your author's amendment, it changes Section 1 as it was in the bill pretty dramatically. It first of all, does not have as many changes to it as the bill. It just has primarily the section lines 1.13 through 1.17, and then there's a couple of things on the page 6. But could you describe what exactly is happening here? What is this bill doing, and how does that mechanism work?
Well, and then thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. That's a great question. When we originally drafted the legislation, we kind of took a little bit more of a firmer approach than what we're doing here. As we looked into it and we started talking to some of the stakeholders, we realized that maybe a little bit more of a conversational approach would be, you know, rather than an overarching, we're going to mandate that these fees cannot exceed X amount of dollars. It goes back to that one-size-fits-all view that we're trying to get away from. What this legislation specifically does is it says that during negotiations for these fees, that these local units of government must get the approval and must have explained all of the costs that go into those fees. As I mentioned, it's not saying that they can't charge whatever fees are legitimate. It's just saying there has to be an explanation. So,
Sarah, just so I understand, so this section of law, subdivision 3, is essentially a structure that allows counties to enter into agreements with establishments to set local governance fees, and it's been in place for whatever period of time. And this is an amendment to that that just says that when you set those fees, you do that in agreement with the establishment, and there's certain parameters on how high they can be set. They have to be established with some kind of fact basis related to their costs. Is that essentially what we're doing? And I see some head nodding here.
Mr. Chairman, yes, it is. The only potential correction to that statement that I would make is that it is not with the restaurant units or hospitality units themselves. This is a conversation or an agreement that is happening between the commissioner and the local units of government concerning those fees.
So the commissioner is in negotiation with the counties on setting the fees, and this establishes parameters for that. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And Senator Higgins, did you have a question?
A couple questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So this section basically deals with all the red counties and the yellow counties. Is that correct?
Senator Cruz?
That is correct, Mr. Chair and members.
So,
Senator Higgins.
Since this is a finance division as well, I assume we'll be talking about the fiscal note, because there will be, I would assume there would be a fiscal note involved in doing that extra work with the department that they delegate now. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
Well, sorry, because I was going to ask about the fiscal note. My thought, that's why I wanted to find out, it seems to be true that there is already the activity of negotiating the fee structures with counties and the state. And so that cost, whatever that is part of the current cost of the department.
I know, Mr. Chair.
And I think that what may happen would be the change in the fees. I would suspect that may have some local impact on the county budgets. I'm not sure it would have anything to do in the state budget. But, Senator Cruz, maybe you want to talk a little bit about the fiscal note. I just got a copy of it. Are there things in the fiscal note that pertain to Section 1, or are the fiscal note items pertaining to other parts of the bill?
Mr. Chair, I have more questions when you get done with
the
discussion.
Sorry, hold on a minute. Senator Higgins, we'll go back to you.
Go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and members, yes, the preliminary fiscal note that you have addresses the bill in its original form. What we're hoping is this softer language that we have here, this more cooperative language, will eliminate a majority, if not all, of the fiscal implications from Section 1. There are other points. There are other sections of the legislation that will be addressed in the Jobs Committee, and I would imagine also the Tax Committee, that will have implications. But specifically to Section 1, without seeing that new fiscal note, we're hoping that this amendment would address a majority of those fiscal concerns. I think that you hit it right on the head that there is if the department, the commissioner, were to choose not to certify certain parts of these fees, it would be very up to the local units of government to increase an additional fee to compensate for whatever that program was if the department felt like that wasn't necessary. And there are programs like that. There are very legitimate concerns, be it traveling time to get out to these different locations. There's some great educational programs. All we're simply saying is let's make sure that we are very clearly defining what those are, and that what our restaurants are being charged for, what our hospitality industry is being charged for, is exactly what they're getting.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the department here that could speak to the perhaps some of the issues in the fiscal note? Thank you. And please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, Senators, I am Colleen Paulus. I am the Manager of Environmental Health Services with the Minnesota Department of Health.
Thank you, Ms. Paulus. Just a quick question, and I don't know if you had any participation in the fiscal note as it was originally the preliminary note, but just again, for my purposes of maybe the committee's information, these fees that are being agreed to by the Department of the Counties, are those fees being are they coming into the state budget or the county budget or both? Where do the fees get collected?
Mr. Chair, Senators, currently the local fees are totally independent of the Minnesota Department of Health. They are not incorporated into the department's fees at all.
So, Ms. Paul, so this bill is dealing with the local fees only that are being collected and is not affecting any of the department, State Department fees. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. McElroy.
There's one exception to that. In the second part of this amendment, there are two fees related to water and sewer inspection. Currently, the fee is $60 if you have either on-site water or on-site sewer. This, we have establishments around the state that have, they may have a local septic, but they're on city water, or vice versa. And this divides the fees into $30 for private water and $30 for private sewer. It will not change revenue at all for those enterprises that have both on-site sanitary and a local well. There will be a small reduction in revenue, but it is quite small.
Okay. So, and members, that change is on page 6 of the bill. And so, Ms. Paulus, would you agree that that there would be a potentially some impact to the state, but only for this provision changing some of the establishments from paying a $60 fee to a $30 fee? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senators, that is correct.
And just again, would you agree with Mr. McElroy's characterization that the effect of it would probably be minimal? I don't know what that, there's no precise definition, but would you agree to that?
Mr. Chair, Senators, yes, it would be minimal. Okay. That's our best guess.
And again, just so we clarify, that the rest of the bill, the language on page 1, is really dealing with the level of fees that are established and collected locally, and that there could very well be an effect on the local budgets that collect these fees. If they're right now collecting a certain level of fee, and by this, if this were to happen, might change those fee levels to something lower than that, although I guess it could be higher too, I'm not sure, but it would have some change potentially to local county budgets, I suppose. And any thought or any, was there any look at the impact of to local governments on this bill, Senator Cruz or Mr. McElroy?
Mr. Chairman, we have not asked for a local impact note. If county boards of health or city boards of health are over collecting their choice, they'll have some choices and some negotiation, but we haven't tried to quantify the local government impact.
Are there other questions from members? Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, so am I misunderstanding? And that's likely. The agreement talked about in Section 1 isn't an agreement that is with the commissioner and the local government. It is the commissioner and the local government. So you're saying that the work, or Ms. Paulus, you're saying that the work that they would do to research whether the local governments are charging appropriate fees has minimal cost to you when it's, you know, the red and the yellow on there? I think that there's a little more work there involved than what you're taking into account.
Ms. Paulus.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, let me see if I can just kind of step through the impact of this bill. First of all, the delegation agreement, currently the Commissioner of Health has delegation agreements with the agencies that are red and yellow on the map. That agreement does not incorporate or has anything to do right now with the fees. So the fees for local agencies are totally separate. The second part of the bill speaks to the public water and sewer fees that the Minnesota Department of Health currently charges in the green area of the map.
And
Mr. Chair.
Just one second, I want to clarify, Ms. Paulus. So on the map, the looks like blue to me, but maybe it's green. Those counties say they have Department of Health jurisdiction. And so those are currently using Department of Health fees and only those fees, or is that correct? And then the others have some local delegated fee structure. And my reading of the bill is that this would only apply to the ones that have already got delegated structures. There's nothing that would require every county to have a delegated agreement. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senators, yes, that is correct.
So, and just again to be clear, it's possible that some of the blue or green counties could decide in the future to have a delegation of authority, and if they did, they would then fall under the terms of this statute that would be amended by this proposal. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And Senator Higgins.
Now I'm really confused, Mr. Chair. I thought what you were doing, Senator Cruz, was saying that the commissioner had to now approve all the fee structure that the delegated entities impose. And Mr. McElroy's nodding his head. That's a change in what you do now in the delegated entities. So how does that not have an impact on the work that you do, Ms. Paulus?
Ms. Paulus.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, currently as part of the delegation agreement, we do have a team that reviews the work of local agencies. It's called evaluations or something similar to audits. And our program is divided up into about 9 different areas. So then when we audit or look, evaluate a local agency, we look at the work that they're doing and ensure that it's meeting the equivalent work of the Minnesota Department of Health so that we have the same standards, we're using the same rules or ordinances, the same approaches when it comes to inspections. We try to have more of a consistent statewide program, and that's why we do the evaluations, because that gives us that ability to ascertain if we do have a consistent statewide program.
Okay, so Mr. Chair,
Senator Higgins.
Ms. Paulus, what does this bill do to your workload that you don't do now?
Ms. Paulus.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, currently as the review with the evaluations, we don't evaluate their fees. We periodically do ask for fee information every couple of years. That is how we develop the chart, just so that we have some type of baseline where the fees are and what how to compare them.
And just maybe you can point to something in the preliminary fiscal note. Is there anything in the preliminary fiscal note that gets to the question that Senator Higgins is asking that shows that there is an increase in administrative cost to do the, the overview of the fees that counties are doing to whatever degree that's different than what you're currently doing? Is there anything in the preliminary note that has cost associated with the parts of the bill that are reviewing the fees? Or that probably wasn't in the original proposals, that wasn't in the fiscal note, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senators, that wasn't part of the original fiscal note.
Okay. So, and I guess just to make sure we get a clear answer for Senator Higgins' question, is it your view that there is not cost, or would there be cost, or you don't know, or?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, I would view that as we would incorporate the work into our evaluation process. Whether or not it is going to increase the amount of work, I can't comment on that at this point.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins.
So this evaluation isn't done. So maybe it's a question for Senator Cruz. Do you expect that this work be done every year for every county or every delegated entity?
Senator Cruz.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Higgins, I would expect it be done whenever the agreements are revised.
So every couple of years
as it is right now.
Okay. And so, Mr. Chair, my next question. I'm so sorry. I know that my city, the city council actually has to vote on the the fee schedule for all of the business licensing fees that are done, and it is put into city ordinance. It's on the website for God and everybody to see. Is that how other local units set their fees? Is it done by action of the council or the county board or whoever?
I don't know who can answer that. Ms. Paulus, do you have any?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, yes, that is my understanding is how the local agencies set their fees.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins.
So we're taking away local authority to set their fees for an appropriate amount and to be responsible to their own constituents who put them into office and take them out of office. I mean, it seems kind of innocuous at this point. You know, it's just go look at their work every once in a while when it comes back to you is the part that we have. And I guess that's okay. It's always good to have another set of eyes looking at the work that you do. But it is the local units of government's job to impose these fees at the level that they know what their employees are being paid. They know what the work costs to do it. So I'm thinking that we're really kind of stomping on our brothers and sisters over there in local government. And I'm not sure why we would do this.
I'm sorry, Senator Higgins, I was distracted here for a minute. Were you asking me a question?
It ended up being just a statement, Mr. Chair, saying that I don't know why we're doing this to our brothers and sisters in local government. Okay. That's their job, but not ours.
And I wanted to ask Senator Cruz or Mr. McElroy if you had any response to the position that Senator Higgins is taking.
Mr. Chairman and Senator members, Cruz. I'm in 100% agreement with you, Senator Higgins.
Well, good. Can I move to amend this?
I think what I want to make sure is perfectly clear is that we are in no way taking away their right to do that. They still have full authority to levy those fees at the local level. What that may look like, and this is me thinking outside of the boxes, it could be potentially, and I put a big question mark by that potentially, because I think if the fees you see on this chart are legitimate fees, I think there's a good chance that they will be approved and absolutely nothing will change. I think if what the potential change would be if there's a discrepancy on whether those charges are appropriate for the service that's being provided, whether it be a licensure service, whether it be an inspection service, if they're found to not be relevant to that, potentially there may have to be an additional fee levied to compensate for whatever that service is. And as I mentioned before, there are some very legitimate reasons, be it education or you know, there's a whole gambit of things that are legitimate charges, but what we're saying is we're only going to charge for the service that's being required there. Local units of government would still have full ability to levy those fees if they felt necessary.
Senator Hayden.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to take just a little bit of a step back. I kind of was following us, trying to follow Senator Higgins' process. So Senator Cruz, because I guess where I'm having a problem is that the bill is implying that somehow cities or local units of government could be potentially charging more for licensure than they should be, and then implying that then they're using it for something that you don't think that the establishment should pay for. If I follow kind of where I think that this is going. So what I'm trying to figure out is, number one, if that's the case, I'd love to kind of figure out what's happening, because there is a process that, for instance, in the city of Minneapolis, you have to go through this process and has to go through the appropriate committees in the city and then has to be voted on by the city council and adopted by the mayor. So there is just a lot of process in that already. And I know one of the things that I've been hearing around here is I've been kind of circling through my committees is this overburden of government, all of these kind of processes and fees and people looking over your shoulder and have to go through another hoop and loop that is stymieing business. But I guess I digress. I'm just trying to, you know, understand why we would be putting another layer. But let me just go to a more practical question. What if the Department of Health decides that the fee that the city is imposing on the business after it's gone through its process is onerous and they shouldn't do it, then what does the Department of Health, per your bill, what is their ability to tell the city that they can't charge that fee? What is their how does that work? And where I'm going is, one, I'd like to just know that, like, do they kind of have the ultimate veto power on it? But then number two, to our testifier, I think it's Ms. Paulus from the Department of Health, when she said that you can incorporate this, what happens when you go through this due process and you ultimately come and you have a different you come up with a different decision than the city has? Then isn't there there should be some sort of due process that the Department of Health has to go through? And if they do that, that seems that that would cost the Department of Health more money in administrative cost. Does this go to an administrative law judge? Or, like, walk me through that, if you would, Senator Cruz, or any one of our testifiers.
Senator Cruz or Ms. Paulus, any comment about the enforcement provision that is contemplated here?
Senators, currently, when a delegated agency is going to make some type of ordinance change, they do send it to us for review. So we review the ordinance to see if it's consistent with the current statutes and rules that we have to enforce. And then we negotiate and say, well, this is where there, you know, this is where there's a gap, or this isn't quite meeting the standard. And so it's typically just a give and take in terms of the negotiation until we get it to the point of where we can agree upon the final product. Then it's given back to the delegated agency, and then it goes through their approval process.
So, Ms. Paulus, you're describing something that goes on currently, which is sort of a negotiation of appropriate fee levels, and through that process there is an agreement that is reached. And so there's not a if you don't do what we say, then we're going to, close down your hospital or something. There's nothing like that.
Mr. Chair, Senators, we currently do not review the fees. So the part of the ordinance is just basically in terms of the implementation of that would be equal to the food code or the lodging code or manufactured home park code. So that's where we work with them and negotiate and try to work out something so that it is more of the same. And I would feel that this would be the same type of process that we currently
have. So, Mr. Chair.
Sir Hayden.
So we're talking about fees, though. So we're not talking about just kind of negotiated the difference between a city ordinance and state statute, making sure that we're saying that the pH balance of water is going to be well within the reason of what the state says versus the city. We're actually talking about fees that the city is imposing, has gone through their process. They go to you. You, in turn, say, we're going to do a study. So we're going to go back and review what you've done, and we're going to, I don't know if you're going to go out to those restaurants and talk to them. I don't know what that process would be, but I know that that costs the city a lot of money in which to kind of make sure that they're thinking about this class one alcohol license for the fine line and how many people are they going to serve and all of the things that they do in order to make up the fee. That it would seem to me that you would then have to review that, and then in the case that you don't agree, there would have to be some due process in terms of figuring out. I mean, I don't always see that may be negotiated in that way, because we're not just talking about interpretation of statute. We're talking about dollars and cents, which is precious to everybody around. So I'm not sure that the answer that you're giving us is the answer that I – let me say this in a better way. I'm just not tracking that answer. It seems to me that you just wouldn't be able to incorporate this. Or, better yet, if you could incorporate it and you do it anyways, then I don't really understand Senator Cruz's bill, because it seems like that's something that you're already doing. I guess where Senator Higgins is going, and Mr. Chair, what I'm trying to figure out is there's something that's not being said here. There's something that Mr. Cruz and Mr. McElroy isn't saying, is why did you bring the bill? What do you really believe is going on? Not this kind of permissive, we just want to check in every once in a while to make sure that it's okay. Clearly, the Restaurant Association is here because they feel like there is a problem. So I'd love to hear Mr. McElroy talk about what he thinks or what his members of his association think the problem is.
Senator Cruz, I don't know if you had something to say, but Mr. McElroy, I also want to get a chance of, we have a person on our list of testifiers from Olmsted County, and it might be helpful to get a perspective from a county that might be affected by this. But Mr. McElroy, did you have a...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hayden, I'd be delighted to answer the question. My members, the Minnesota Restaurant Association has about 1,800 members. They range in size from very small, the tip-top dairy bar in Osakis with four employees open 6 months a year, to very large. They get, a fair number of them have locations across multiple jurisdictions. They get frustrated when the state fee is $270 and the fee for what appears to them to be exactly the same work is up to four times higher than that in some counties in the state. It appears to my members that some local jurisdictions have used the fees for health inspections to make up for budget challenges in other parts of their work. And we're happy to pay for the work that they do. And we're not insisting that it be the same across the state. But if you look at this chart, it's not intuitive to us why a small restaurant inspection that costs $270 in the green counties costs $900 in some counties and $1,047 in others. But we didn't think we had the wisdom to set those fees in statute. We like the idea of empowering the Commissioner of Health, whom some days we may not agree with, but most of the time we trust them, and who has been under the discipline of Minnesota Statutes Chapter 16A for a very long time, 20 years or more, and to impose that same accountability, transparency for their fees on local units of government. So yes, it's about money. We're happy to pay, but we only want to pay for the services that we get if you're going to call it a fee.
I'd like to ask Mr. Giesen if he is here to also provide some testimony. And I understand. Please come and introduce yourself. And
good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Pete Giesen, the Director of Olmsted County Public Health in Rochester. I'm here on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Local Public Health Association. So I'd have a short testimony if I could share that first.
Absolutely.
First, let me start. We appreciate the willingness of Senator Cruz and the other concerned parties to meet our association staff to seek potential compromise on this language. We are all interested in transparency related to fees and willing to work towards that goal. However, we are opposed to the bill in its current form for several reasons. As currently written, this amendment restricts the ability of local officials, elected officials, to set their own fee schedules. It takes governance responsibility away from local governments and gives the control to state agency staff, who are not elected and not responsible to our constituents. We have been assured that no one involved wants the state staff to set our fees, but the language as written gives them that authority. Current law already contains requirements for transparency through public hearings and reasonable fee levels. Minnesota Statute 373.41 states, the county may charge fees for service provided by any county office, official, department, court, or employee. It goes on to say the county board may, after a public hearing, establish the amounts of fees to be charged for the services unless the statute has specified that amount. There must be a reasonable relation between the fee and the cost of providing the service. So that's in 373.41. The amendment does not clarify how MDH will determine fee levels and program costs for individual delegated programs. The language implies this will be responsive to the costs of each community, but that level of analysis is unlikely to actually happen at the state level. Instead, it is far more likely that MDH would create one statewide fee schedule, which is our concern. While this might not work for the state health department, while this may work for the state health department, who can average costs across large and small communities, the one-size-fits-all does not work when it comes to individual programs. So the costs in Olmsted County would be different than they would be in other places in Minnesota. A statewide average is not the best solution and does not take into account the difference in economic conditions. This is one of the very reasons that local governments choose to take on these delegation programs, to provide more localized level of service in their communities where staff are accessible and responsive to local needs. There are other factors that impact costs, and I think this gets to the point of where there is variation in different agencies. Some local agencies provide more service than the state minimum. Examples include additional food safety education classes, food safety advisory groups and award programs for local restaurants, timely consultation, and more frequent inspections and follow-up inspections. These value-added services are provided based on support from the local restaurants. Local service delivery and fee schedules related to that service is more responsive to the local businesses. We know one specific concern is that some departments like ours in Olmsted County charge a higher fee than the state health department. This happens for several reasons, and I can share with you more in detail if you'd like. But I want to emphasize again, this is because the fees set in my community reflect the costs in the community. If MDH is expected to routinely review program costs and set localized fees, this will require more MDH staff. And most importantly, this type of governance is the responsibility of the local governing board, not state agency staff. In summary, city councils and county boards are in the best position to determine the level of fees needed to cover the cost of their program. It is much easier for a restaurant owner to approach their local elected official if he or she is not happy about license fees than it is at the state level. We are happy to continue to work with the author and the Hospitality Association to address their concerns about transparency, but we oppose the bill in its current form. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Giesen. In Olmsted County, have you ever had, I guess, members of the establishments that are part of the Hospitality Association or businesses that may fall into some of the categories on this chart, have they ever come to the county and protested or complained about the fees and suggested they were excessive or high? Has that ever happened in Olmsted County?
Mr. Chair, it did happen. It's probably been 10 years since that has happened. And since we invested in redesigning our food protection program, where it's really an approach where we work very closely with the industry in a way that focuses on the public health risk, we really haven't had that issue raised locally for the last 10 years or so.
And Mr. Giesen, you say the last 10 years, is that during the time that you've been involved? Or?
Right. I've been with Olmsted County for almost 30 years.
Are there other questions? Looks like Ms. Reed has an answer for us, maybe, on the earlier questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I do have an answer for you for the question earlier. So the number in the chart that currently reads 8,368, for our food license in that category, it's actually $1,534.
So just members, that cell in the chart, the average for that category would be 1534. Is that correct?
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for doing that and getting back to us so promptly.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Hayden.
Well, thank you for indulging me, Mr. Chair. So that just the difference in that number itself is extreme, Mr. Chair. So I just, you know, with all due respect to Mr. McElroy and Senator Cruz, that brings into question the chart as a whole. Like, what do we know about these numbers? How do we know that these numbers are right? How do we know that the averages that you put here are the right averages? How do we know that, you know, I used to do a lot of work in southern Minnesota, or what I would consider southern Minnesota, and so the Big Ten restaurant in Owatonna is different than the same kind of restaurant in at the University of Minnesota. I mean, I just don't, I'm saying a lot here. I guess I'm just, I think that to go from 8,368, and Ms. Reed now says it's 1,534, it seems to me, Ms. Senator Cruz, that we're, this bill isn't ready. That, you know, that the numbers that we have widely vary. We're not sure if they're correct or not, where we haven't done our fact-checking well enough to even say that there is an issue, and that what Mr. McElroy said, that this wide deviation from county to county and place to place is happening, and if it is happening, there isn't a good reason for it, depending on the venue and the space and kind of all the things that you need to do in order to protect the citizens for whatever restaurant is in its area. So, you know, with that, Mr. Chair, I guess I won't make the motion. I'm not I just don't always feel it's appropriate to do that to someone else's bill. But I would look to say that, Senator Cruz, it appears that you have a little more work to do, and that when you come before us, we should not have such a wide discrepancy in numbers that you put, you know, before us, that we actually know what those numbers are and that we're voting on something and we're operating in a place that we know that there's an issue.
Mr. McElroy?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hayden, we inquired of this data came from Minnesota Department of Health. Minnesota Department of Health asked cities and counties for the number. We immediately saw that number as being suspicious when we got this data in January. The Department of Health recontacted Minneapolis, recontacted them again as recently as last Friday. And so the number Ms. Reed brought us is new information to us. And we will have to have further discussions with the city of Minneapolis. That number still becomes the highest in the state by $400, but the number is the responses given to the Minnesota Department of Health by city and county health departments. That was the only number that we saw on the chart that was kind of illogical, and I wish our efforts to correct it had been more successful. Minneapolis, as you know, Senator, is fairly complicated from which to get information. But the rest of the chart is logical internally and is based on a survey done by the Department of Health in January.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Cruz and Ms. McElroy, I do have a question, and I do understand where these figures came from, and I do believe that you did do due diligence on these figures, and I'm glad that was clarified, that 1534, but it's still very egregious. But I do serve the two bottom counties down there, and we have a swimming pool in Bryceland. The A1 amendment does address swimming pools still, is that correct? That is struggling to stay alive, even with some of the changes that we made with the swimming pool regulations and the piping, would they have the ability to lower their fee and be able to, because they're, some of these small communities live by month to month in their checkbook. They don't have the ability to have this flexibility, but if they want to keep their swimming pool, number one, can they work with the department to lower the fee, or for some other reason that they need to lower the fee of any other piece in this legislation, can they do that? That's what I'm worried about.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. McElroy.
Rosen, in what county is Bryceland located?
Faribault.
All right. And Faribault is a partial delegation county, and the section, and we may need Ms. Paulus to help us with this. I'm not sure if that authority for swimming pool inspections is delegated in the yellow or orange counties or not. I believe that continues to be a Department of Health requirement, and this bill wouldn't affect those fees. But if perhaps, Mr. Chair, we could ask Ms. Paulus to come back.
Okay. Sure, she's on her way. Ms. Paulus, have you any light to shed on that question?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I understand that the question is about Faribault County.
Yes.
And the fees for Faribault County are set by Faribault County.
For swimming pool inspections?
For swimming pools. They're a delegated agency.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair and
Mr.
Senator,
McElroy,
it would require that the county establish that the fees don't exceed the cost of providing the service. And so that respect, the delegation agreement would give the city of Bryceland the opportunity to have that discussion with Faribault County, and it would have to meet a discussion with the commissioner that it didn't exceed the cost.
Senator Sharon.
I'm going to try to, this is a very circular kind of conversation, so I'm just going to lay out what I'm hearing and how I understand its implications. I hear you saying that the Restaurant Association is concerned that costs are being, for non-related costs to the business, are being shifted into these fees for local governments. As if that's a novel idea. Might I suggest that shifts has been something that the state of Minnesota certainly has been doing, so that just the notion that that might be happening and an outrage about that, I think we should question that. anyway, we're talking about and accepting the concept that it's a redistribution of a fear, at least, that there's a redistribution of costs at the local government level that have been placed on them because of the withdrawal of the state's commitment to them through fees. Not certain about that, but by asking the state to take on a role of oversight, we could shed some light on that and determine whether or not that's true. And if it is, then the state would ask the local government to adjust its fees accordingly. And that assumes, of course, that the department is not going to have any problems differentiating between the communities. It would not take an extraordinary effort on the part of the department to know the different economics of every community and county in the state. That's something that would simply be known at the state level. The state has the capacity to understand the unique character of absolutely every community setting fees. Of course, that's absurd. The state does not have that capacity. So it would take an extraordinary effort on the part of the state. And as a result of that, what Senator Hayden is saying is that the eventually, because of the increasing cost to the state budget that may not be anticipated now, would be resolved by a recommendation from the state to have a single kind of licensing fee for a single kind of activity, which is then a redistribution again of the costs through all communities, rural communities like Senator Rosen is talking about and like the ones that I'm representing start to pay in the redistribution formula for the costs that are higher maybe in some of these more urbanized communities that are represented in this graph. And that is a concern of the communities that I am representing and have communicated that to me. So I do think that we have to go back to the underlying premise, and I appreciate what's being said. I hear from the Firefighters Association this morning that they don't like the costs of the state's deficit shifted onto them and taken out of their reserves. This issue is broad. It's not just here for the restaurateurs. I just do not believe in this portion of the bill that by creating a state government oversight in relationship to the size of what this problem may or may not be and whether or not, in fact, we want to say that we're going to take a position against any shifting of any expenditures, costs of local government onto fees, I think we need to think very carefully about that.
Thank you, Senator Sharon. Members, we have another bill to take up as well, and I think we've had a airing of, and I would like to entertain a motion to refer the bill to jobs. Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair, I have a couple motions first. I move to delete lines 1.3 to 1.31 of the A1 amendment as it was adopted. That's the new... The State Department has to double-check the work of the local governments and see that what they do is up to somebody's standard.
I'm sorry, Senator Higgins, you're moving to delete...
On the A1 amendment, which
yes.
we adopted earlier, delete lines 1.3 to 1.31.
And so the only change would be the reduction from $60 to $30 potentially on the...
That's what's left.
Senator Higgins moves that oral amendment to delete lines 1.3 to 1.31. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion fails.
Mr. Chair,
Senator
my
Higgins.
Other amendment is on the original bill. Delete the last section. 11.10 and 11.
Senator Higgins, on the original bill...
That's the naming of this act.
Section, sorry.
The last page, the last two lines.
Oh, Section 8, the naming of the bill, the Restaurant
yes.
Recovery Job Creation
yes,
Act.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, there's no reason to
I tend to agree with you, Senator Higgins. I would with all respect to the author, support that amendment. I guess I've been infected over the years by the Don Betzel theory of how we deal with legislation. But Sir Higgins moves to delete Section 8. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. I would entertain a motion. Senator Benson moves that Senate File 1701 as amended be passed and referred to the Jobs Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion carries. Thank you, Senator Cruz and Mr. McElroy and testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
And Senator Benson, I believe you have a bill. Welcome, Senator Benson. I guess this is round two.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The revisiting of Senate File 1675, there's been a tremendous amount of work done, and so I anticipate we'll be able to move through this very directly and get to a vote.
All right.
If we may, Mr. Chair, I'd like to begin where we left off. We were in the middle of amending the A3 amendment. We have the A4 amendment to the A3 amendment. If you'll recall, on the A3 amendment, the CCAP, we were looking at daily attendance records for all children. The amendment changes that to be just CCAP children. And then further in that amendment, there was the question of using the career lattice, and that language has been removed entirely. So we are amending... let's see, page 7,
she's wrong.
Lines 1.17, and page 9, starting at about 9.3. And those are the significant changes to the A3 amendment. So if I could move the A4 amendment to amend the A3 amendment, I'd like to do so at this time.
Senator, I'm not sure if I have the A3 amendment. I have the A4 amendment. Is the A4 amendment essentially a delete
it
all?
It is not a delete all. It is an editing amendment.
Do members have the A3 amendment that we were discussing previously? Okay. It's being distributed now. And Senator Benson, the A3 amendment was adopted previously. Is that correct?
The A3 amendment was not adopted previously. We were in the midst of discussions and came upon significant stopping points with regard to the record keeping requirement on page 7, starting at line number 17. And I ask that the bill be laid on the table.
Okay. I'm just checking.
Mr. Chair and members, you might want to check with the Secretary. I show that the A3 was adopted, but my notes may be wrong. I don't know if we're taking the vote.
I
don't remember.
I think we're having some discrepancy. It may have been adopted already, which would mean then that the A4 would have to be an amendment to the bill as amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator.
We're just confirming that.
It's, Mr. Chair, it's drafted as the amendment.
Yes. Senator Higgins, the debate is whether or not we adopted the A3 at the last meeting. If so, then the A4 would have to be an amendment to the bill as amended, not to the A3.
If you want, Mr. Chair, if you want to get yourself out of figuring out the parliamentary, have Senator Benson withdraw the A3, then offer the A3 with the amendment.
All right, let's check. We're just trying to validate that we did, in fact, do that.
And Mr. Chair?
I'm hearing that we did not adopt the A3, that the A2 was adopted in the last hearing. So I think we're okay as we stand here. So Senator Benson's motion is to adopt the A4 amendment to the A3, to amend the A3 amendment with the A4 amendment. And members, to that motion, are there questions? And just to review, Senator Benson, your A4 amendment removes the provision that would require all children, but only the CCAP children, the record keeping to be directed only to those. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair, and the child care providers are okay with both of these changes.
Okay. Are there questions? Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, just a technical one. I think I would delete the comma after first in line 1.8.
Mm-hmm. All right, Senator Marty moves to delete the comma after the word date.
I would just incorporate that if I were.
All right, we'll incorporate
the
that.
Next comma after the word first is. What
after the word first.
Right. Line.
Yeah, just eight.
Okay, so we're going to delete as incorporate into the amendment the deletion of the comma after the word first on line 1.8. Senator Laurie.
And then, real quickly, Mr. Chair and Senator Benson and the department and the child care associations, thank you so much for going and working so hard on these. I understand that this is a widely accepted amendment, and we were having a lot of trouble moving this last time. So we just got to make sure that you're good and ready for judiciary before we let you go. So.
Oh, somebody else
you for all the hard work. And I know that this does represent, and probably a few more amendments to come. Thank you for the hard work.
So,
and Senator Benson.
If we could resume movement.
Yes, we've got the A4 amended with the oral correction of the comma. All in favor of that amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? A4 is adopted to the A3.
And so, Mr. Chair, that leaves us with the A3 amendment. We had significant discussion and have now amended it, and so I would be ready for questions on that amendment.
All right. So we are returning now to the A3 amendment.
As amended.
And, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
Just as a reminder, there were a couple of technical changes to dates on this amendment. So if you have a clean copy, we did make a change on 11.29, changing that effective date. And I am trying to find the other. And then on, I'm going backwards, I apologize, line 9.4, changing the date there as well.
So just on the A3 amendment, line 9.4.
Is
a beginning January 1, 2012, that would be 2013, is
yes,
that correct?
Mr. Chair.
And on page 11, line 11.29, that October 1 would be 2012?
Yes.
So we'll in. And do those changes need to be, I guess we can incorporate those into the amendment as we adopt it or
they
as we proceed?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
On the A3 amendment, are there questions, or is there testimony that you wish to make at this point? Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick question on page 3, and I apologize if we talked about this last time. 310 through 318, I'm just wondering why it's structured the way that it is as opposed to just changing the age from 13 down to 10. Is there a purpose for that? I'm just trying to understand.
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, I believe the difference, and the department can correct me, but I believe it's reasonable cause as defined under Section 45C.02 is the difference in those two.
Are there other questions?
And if there are no other questions, Mr. Chair.
Then, Senator Benson, are you ready to move the A3 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Move the A3 amendment.
Senator Benson moves the adoption of the A3 amendment as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, if we could move to the A6 amendment. And
all right.
Five.
No, I've moved the A6.
We are distributing that, members.
And, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
If I could ask advice, am I allowed an author's amendment on my second round of the same bill?
I don't know that that's
right.
Permissible under our rules.
That's fine, Mr. Chair.
All right.
The A6 amendment is a initial changes to the bill directly regarding the safe place for newborns, and it also considers the directs that siblings that weight be given to siblings being placed together prior to being placed in the foster care system. And so Ms. Borsheim is here to give any further information you'd like on the A6 amendment. This is amending Senate File 1675.
Are there questions on the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
I had forgotten council has asked for an oral amendment to the A6 amendment.
Ms. White.
Mr. Chair, members, on page 24, line 35, delete or fire department. The fire department was deleted in one instance up above on the amendment, but it needs to be deleted further back in the bill on page 24, line 35.
So, Ms. White, line 24.35, we're deleting or fire department?
Yes.
Only? Okay.
Wait.
And Senator Marty?
Mr. Chairman, I think on that one you want to just delete or fire, not or fire department. No?
No. Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, then that provision is amended not once but twice in other amendments related to this bill.
So we're not going to leave the sentence to be "and a police," period.
No, because it's being amended again.
Okay. Are you comfortable with leaving that hanging for the time being?
Mr. Chairman, I will trust Senate counsel's word, though I did suggest we might delete a comma on line, page 6, line 15, because otherwise you have a comma period from the earlier amendment on line, the first line of the A6. You should delete the comma before that, too, not to be too picky about commas, but somebody will have to clean it up otherwise.
Okay, so you're moving to delete a comma on
line 15 of page 6.
After department?
You're right.
Okay.
And so, Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins.
In some iteration of that same section, did we stick an or and before the phrase a police department? Because otherwise it just says a hospital, a medical clinic, a police department. And we should have an and or an or somewhere in there.
Senator Council.
Council can fix it.
Have you advice on that?
I will, Mr. Chair. Again, this section is amended twice.
Yeah.
And I think it's okay, but I'll make sure.
Perfect.
Okay. So we have apparently another amendment or two that will fix some of these odd grammatical, syntactical constructions.
Mr. Chair, this is my kind of amendment.
I appreciate that, Senator Higgins. I'm glad that you're here to keep us on track here. On the A6 amendment, are there questions?
That's why you're a lawyer and I'm an editor.
Senator Benson will move the adoption of the A6 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? A6 is adopted.
And, Mr. Chair, I have the A5 amendment amending the A2 amendment, which we've already adopted. And this is the final cleanup of the Safe Place for Newborns provision. As we had seen before, we worked with the police, fire, sheriff's department, and ambulance service to come to the point where the first line of action is recommended to be call 911, and the appropriate first responders will be dispatched. And I have a note here from O.J. Doyle with the Minneapolis Ambulance Association. They're recommending, and not to be included in the bill, but to be spoken about in the hearing, that we call for an ambulance first because a newborn will need medical attention. Callers might be hesitant to call for help if they believe that law enforcement is going to respond, and we don't want them to hesitate. We want them to take care of the child. And callers are more comfortable having medical providers respond. The overriding issue is concern for the welfare of the baby. And so I've read those comments in to help convey the message from the Minnesota Ambulance Association. They are in support of this bill and want to do all they can.
Okay, and I'm assuming that this language has been worked out with the various concerned parties. And
yes, all of those who were at the table last time are fine with this amendment. And
okay. I'm being advised by our fiscal analyst that this would create a cost, and maybe I could ask Dennis, our analyst, to explain the cost. Mr. Albrecht. Senator Benson?
I am sorry, Mr. Chair and Mr. Albrecht. I was being asked a question. These are extremely rare instances, and so the fiscal impact would be negligible, to say the least. And in one of the things that I learned in the process of vetting this bill is that jurisdictions vary in how they respond to a 911 call. For example, Coon Rapids is an all-call situation. If there's a 911 call, fire department rolls, ambulance rolls, or the paramedics from the fire department roll, an ambulance can is notified, and the police are notified. Minneapolis has a different protocol. And so the suggestion by the ambulance department is that you call ambulance first, because there are jurisdictions where there is discretion as to whether or not an ambulance is called, and that the 911 operators would be trained to understand that.
And Senator Benson, there has not been a fiscal note attached to this bill to this point. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
And I believe this is going to judiciary at the next stop.
It is going to judiciary, Mr. Chair.
I'm being advised that the point that Mr. Albrecht is raising may not be broad enough to have a fiscal, significant fiscal impact. I see some people nodding out here in the audience. So I guess all I would say is that if there is a concern that is related to this issue that gets raised between now and passage to Judiciary Committee, then it would end up in the Finance Committee and we could address it at that point. But I'm hearing that it may not be an issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So on the A5 amendment, this is an amendment to the A2, which the A2 has already been amended onto the bill, so this is in effect an amendment, or has the A, just want to step back here. The A2 amendment we've already adopted, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So this would be an amendment to the, A2. Says here to the amendment, but if we've adopted the A2, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, what you could do is move to amend or reconsider the amendment, adopt this, and make the amendment, and then adopt the
All right. Is that all right?
Mr. Chair, I'll move to reconsider the A2 amendment.
All right. Senator Benson moves to reconsider the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is carried. We now have the A2 amendment back before us, and then we have the A5, and so Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the A5 amendment to the A2 amendment.
Senator Benson moves the A5 amendment to the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
So, belay that vote, Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I may have missed it. Did Senator Benson, did you explain why we were doing just earlier, before the A2, we had police department, then we changed it to law enforcement, now we put it back to sheriff's department. Did you explain that? You may have, if so, I just missed it.
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, the Sheriff's Department stepped up to be a point of contact because they deal with Greater Minnesota so much, and often on a 911 call, they are the first to respond. They manage many of the 911 centers, and so they were willing to take on some of the explanation and carrying forward.
Thank you. So now we can return to, we have the motion, the A5 amendment to the A2 amendment is before us. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A5 is adopted, and now we have to adopt the A2, or do we need to amend that again? Is there another amendment that we need to?
Mr. Chair, I would move the A2 amendment.
Senator Benson moves the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed. The A2 amendment is adopted. And I think we have one more. Is that correct?
And, yes, Mr. Chair. This is, and I am probably outside of some protocol, but the A7 amendment is for this committee's information only. It pertains to judiciary, but it is a significant policy issue. I am still learning, and I am not prepared to bring this amendment, but it does pertain only to judiciary. Because there's significant overlap, I'd like you to have the opportunity to review it and comment on it before we get to judiciary. And I'm working with the tribal courts. This is related to an October Supreme Court ruling, Minnesota Supreme Court ruling. And we would be changing statute significantly. I'm still reading the Supreme Court opinion to see where this lies. And so we'll take further information in judiciary, but I'm happy to discuss this issue between here and there.
So, Senator Benson, you're not anticipating moving the adoption of this amendment at this point. You want to wait till judiciary to adopt the amendment, but you'd like to have this committee be aware.
Yes.
And
Mr.
I think
Chair.
That's certainly fair. So I guess without having this moved formally before the committee, I certainly would entertain any questions any member of the committee has to the proposed A7 amendment, although I know members here, some of them serve on the judiciary, so you will see it again. But are there any questions on the A7? Thank you for calling this out. Seeing no questions, are there other amendments, Senator Benson, that you have?
Mr. Chair, we have no more amendments. We have Senate File 1675 before us. I feel it has been vetted, but we have the opportunity now for more questions.
All right. Members, this bill will be moved to the Judiciary Committee. So any final comments, questions, testimony? Senator
Mr.
Benson?
Chair? Okay. Mr. Chair, if
Senator
counsel
Benson.
Could advise me, on page 24 of the bill, lines 34 and 35, one of our editors in the audience would like verification that we did, in fact, remove police and fire from lines 34 and 35. Is that accurate?
Ms. White.
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, we did. That was the oral amendment I did to the A6, was removing a fire department.
Okay.
And so I'm assuming, and counsel can correct me, but there will be an engrossed version available to the Judiciary Committee. Is that true?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So you'll have an opportunity to verify that, but I will take counsel's word that the things that we did have addressed those language issues, and we have it right, but you'll have an opportunity to see it before it gets to judiciary.
Okay.
Senator Benson moves the passage adoption of the Senate File 1675 as amended and referred to the Judiciary Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Benson, for your work, and members for your work. Senator Higgins.
Thank you to whoever made the microphones loud enough that we could hear today.
I second the motion.
Me too.
All right, and we are adjourned.